Gary DePaul with Unlabeled Leadership. Welcome to episode 6, Peter Popovich and the Pickled Lifelong Journey. Now try saying that 3 times fast. Let's get started. Describing Peter as an entrepreneur is an understatement. He is a keynote speaker, an executive coach, consultant, and franchise owner. And before all that, he was a sales representative, marketer, manager, engineer, athletic director, professor, realtor, and a tennis champion. He's also a senior games gold medalist in pickleball, racquetball, and badminton, all 3 of those, so 3 times gold medalist. Now you can add on top of all that, podcast guest. If you can't tell, I'm amazed at Peter's diverse career. But I will say this, there's an underlying theme in Peter's career, and it's a combination of 2 things, and that is curiosity and lifelong learning. I also believe that his curiosity and learning is a major contributor to his accomplishments. But with this episode, it's our turn to be curious and to learn from Peter, which is why I decided to catch up with him. Part 1, who will write to me? It's nice to say we're in control of our destiny, but unfortunately, a lot of us, we don't act like it. We'll express things like, our circumstances are tough, the economy's down, and we'll even blame other people for our missteps. Peter has some insight into what's in our control and out of our control, and he tells it to us in a story. Here's Peter talking now.
There's a saying that goes, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And I believe that with all my heart. And I'll talk about this later on, but this particular situation was such a powerful learning experience that I reflect and share on a regular basis. Between 1980 and 1984, I was working for Westinghouse Electric Corporation in Caracas, Venezuela, in technical sales. I'm an engineer by training. I was single at the time, excited to go to a foreign country and expand my learning and learn about different cultures, learn the language. So I was really excited to be down there.
Was this before or after you learned Spanish?
So I had some high school Spanish.
Okay.
But I really wasn't fluent in the language, no. So I'm in Venezuela and I'm there learning the language, learning the culture, learning my trade of selling electrical equipment to utilities, but I was getting a little bit homesick. Typical stay assignment was 2 years. I ended up being there 4 years and really enjoyed it. But after a year or so, I was getting, you know, a little bit homesick.
Sure.
I remember contacting my sister. Her name in the U.S. is Miriana. Some people call her Mary Jane. Some people call her Marijuana. But she's my little sister, a year and a half younger than I am. And I was complaining to her about how, you know, no one was writing letters to me. And I really would love to get some letters. And she thought and pondered for a while. And she asked me this question that was really life-changing. She said, Peter, in the last 90 days, how many letters have you written?
Wow.
I paused and I realized I had not written a single letter. With that being said, the principle that comes into play that transformed me is this whole idea that whatever you want, you should give it away first. For example, if I wanted more letters, I needed to write more letters. If I want people to be nice to me, I need to be nicer to more people. If I want to make more money, I need to tithe or spend more money. All these principles made a lot of sense to me. And over time, there was this principle called principle of reciprocity, that whatever you give, it'll come back. You give good vibes come back. Well, the ultimate test for me was several jobs later on. I was sales manager in a high-end residential community. And I was leading a sales force and a staff And I was getting frustrated that I was having to control stuff and manage stuff. And, you know, I was wishing that more people would do more stuff.
People were not stepping up and contributing to the team. It was mainly you just trying to get people to do stuff and make sure things were taken care of like that.
Yes. I just didn't want to be always solving problems. I wanted them to step up and solve things. I wanted them to grow bigger and better. I wanted to be in more control. And then I reflected back, you know, the 10 or so years before then, and I started thinking about my sister's question. And I said, maybe the way I get more control is I should give up control. So for several days, weeks, and then it continued evolving, I just decided that I wasn't going to try to control my salespeople or control my staff. And what that meant is when situations came up, I would engage them in a conversation about, well, how do we move forward? Here's a problem. What do you suggest? How would you like to contribute? Who else can we pull into this situation as opposed to stepping into these challenges and opportunities and coming up with my answer, my suggestion, my recommendation, my diligence, my drive?
Yeah, there's a couple of things I'm hearing. One is, and these are some leadership beliefs, that command and control is a shared responsibility. And I'll couple that with leading well is about empowering others.
Yeah, well, command and control only works in very limited situations. That as a business management model in the past no longer applies. It has to be more of a collaborative engagement, empowerment model. When people start talking about command and control, my first thought is it has to be only on a situational basis where both the commander and the soldier agree that someone needs to be in charge and the commander needs to make a decision that the soldier can follow. And I'm not just talking military, I'm talking about all situations. And I'm sure you're familiar with the situational leadership model. That's the first element. That first element of directing only applies effectively if the employee is at that stage where they need direction. For example, when you start in a new job, I don't care how freaking brilliant you are. You need someone to teach you the ropes, how things are done, where the resources are, the people are. So you want to be directed. You want to know where the freaking bathroom is. Someone needs to tell you. You can't say, you know what? Let me figure out on my own. Make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. With your situation, when you started including them, when you started asking their opinion and trying to get them to help contribute more to problems and situations, how'd it work out?
Well, it worked out slowly but surely, very effectively. And it is a concept that I've applied ever since. How important it is to engage people in the solutions. Great leadership is not about command and control. Great leadership is more along the lines of engaging, empowering, leveraging, supporting, having the answers come from the collective as opposed to from the brilliance of the leader's mind. There are a lot, and I've had plenty of experience where I've worked with brilliant leaders. No, brilliant individuals who are in leadership positions, but were not very effective at engaging the rest of us because they would say, here's the problem, ask for recommendations, and then scoff those recommendations and say, here's what we're going to do, and we will dutifully follow. That model disengages folks. It makes them become pieces of furniture. It makes them become robots. And no one wants to be a robot.
You know, what I'm hearing is another belief around leadership called control erodes relationships. Those three words.
Well, control erodes all relationships. Try to control your kids. Okay. wait. Try to control your spouse. See how that works for you.
Yeah, that would last 3 seconds in my head. And then after that, that would, no, No, well, that's a really good point.
Well, we learn. I mean, you know, just remember how we grow and evolve from being very dependent, being children,
yep,
and needing help, but we fight like crazy to become independent.
Yes.
Gary, it's great to be independent. However, to get to the next stage of evolution is to go in this area of interdependence. How do you lean on people? How do you collaborate? How do you engage them? How do you empower them? It cannot be by taking control. And most of them has to be about giving up control, which is, I think, one of your seven principles.
Yep. I think people need to listen to this part of the podcast 3 or 4 times because you have given up so many underlying beliefs and principles of leadership in just one story. I mean, it's just, that's incredible.
Thank you. Well, think about who our best teachers are. I contend it is our family first, and in this case, my younger sister that continues being a great teacher. And since then, not just professionally, but personally, my wife, Virginia, and then our 31-year-old, soon-to-be 31-year-old daughter, Natalie, the best teachers I've ever had. And the reason for that is that command and control doesn't work in those situations. It's more collaboration. Emotions come into play. And so frequently emotions end up undercutting relationships and effectiveness in quote leadership and or management roles.
Part 2, one of the oldest managerial mistakes. If you ever worked in management, you know that there's things that we do that, aren't necessarily best for us, the team, the department, the company. But there's this temptation that's there that too many of us fall trap to. For example, doing a task that should be delegated to someone else on the team, or assigning the most difficult task to your top performers rather than giving your less skilled performers an opportunity to develop themselves. Peter shares a story that falls in this area. Here's Peter again.
I was providing leadership training for a manufacturing company. As you know, as we all know, there's so much information out there, and I specifically like the situational leadership model, but there are plenty of models, and I was trying to cover several of them to give the employees and the leadership team different tools and perspectives to apply. Well, during that process, I made sure that I spent a bunch of time with the CEO of this company so that I could understand what they already had in place, what worked, what didn't work, so that I didn't go down a path that would be counterproductive.
Well, you're not offering a cookie cutter solution, are you?
Absolutely. There is no cookie cutter solution. Even if it is cookie cutter, it's just for freaking cookies. It is not for relationships.
Gotcha.
You have to customize it to the situation, to the individual that's going to need to implement it. When you're teaching or consulting, you're not going to be there day in and day out to apply it.
Yes.
So in working with this CEO, I said, what is the biggest challenge, you know, relative to leadership? And what this individual said is, I am so tired of my people asking me a bazillion questions. And he's not talking about just people working in the building. He's talking about the executive team. And he says, I wish that they would just solve these problems on their own rather than always checking in with me. And I thought about it and I said, well, first of all, let me ask you, how did you become CEO? And his comment was, well, I actually started out in the shop and I just, you know, worked real hard. I was diligent. I came in early, stayed late, whatever needed to be done. I was willing to roll up my sleeve. When I saw a problem someplace that wasn't within my area, I would just jump in, and I just love solving problems. And I said, well, so is your secret solving problems? He goes, yes, I love helping people. I love solving problems. And I said, I get it. So now I want you to consider this. And that is that moving forward, consider not solving any problems where you provide the answer. From now on, when one of your folks comes in, whether it's a CFO or whether it's someone from HR, whoever it is with a problem or situation, resist the temptation to solve the problem, even though you know the answer.
Now I'm imagining that the CEO is taking a deep breath, like, wait a minute, that goes against my nature.
Yes, it was over a year in this relationship before I felt that I'd earned the trust. So what I suggested was, try this. When someone comes in with a problem, welcome them, whatever time you have, whether it's 5 minutes or 10 minutes, tell them what the parameters are and ask them if they can explain the situation in a short period of time. If they say okay, yes, then you shut the door and totally focus on them and their situation. Do not look at your cell phone. Do not look at the computer. Do not be interrupted by anything. Be totally devoted to them and ask them what the situation is.
And don't speak. Listen.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Listen, but ask. And the only question you can ask are questions for you to understand the situation so that you can then paraphrase it to them to their satisfaction, that you understand what the problem is that they're trying to deal with.
Gotcha.
Until you get to that situation, all you can do is listen, ask questions, and listen. Now, listening is not just with the ears. It is with the eyes. It's with the body language. Really pay attention to your face, because our faces give us away. So it's got to be a relaxed, calm, endearing face. Think of it that you're talking to an 8-year-old. You would never frown when an 8-year-old shared their problem. You would be leaning in, totally listening to them without any kind of judgment and in pure curiosity.
This is a good example of a type of giving up control. You are giving up the control of the conversation, and you're actually allowing the other person to lead the conversation. And your role is to inquire to better understand where this person is leading you to.
Absolutely. And it's magical, first of all, for the individual that's asking the questions, because they don't have to solve any problems yet. All they have to do is listen and be in total curiosity. The value for the listener is, this might be one of the few times they feel like they're really being heard. And being heard makes a person feel like someone really cares about them. You know, there's a saying, I think it goes back to one of the presidents, and it says, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Well, one of the ways to demonstrate care is to really listen and really ask questions that are about learning and not judging and not about solving yet. Once the person nods their head because you paraphrase what the problem is, then your next question is, what are our options? And they can't explain the breadth and depth of the situation with just words, because there are feelings behind it. You don't have enough time to listen to all of that stuff, but you have the time for you to understand the situation and then to empower them by asking them, what are our options? Now, one of the cop-outs is that they might say, I don't know, that's the reason I'm here. But that is a cop-out, because I guarantee you they have a solution. And so you just say, well, brainstorm with me. What are some of the possibilities? Whatever they came up with, do not judge them. Always say, well, what else? What else? What else? Have at least 3 options, at least from my perspective.
You know, I had a VP of sales that I reported to at one time, sales and implementation. And I was telling him about a problem. And he looked at me and said, that's not my problem. And he, by no means was he going to offer a solution. Okay, yes, I'll admit, it's a little different.
It is a little different. And again, context matters. The relationship matters. But my goal for the CEO was to build the relationships with these people coming with the problems to empower them. So the next step in the empowerment is, after they'd identified options A, B, and C, ask probing questions about the pros and cons of each of those. Don't judge any of them. Once that's been exhausted, then say, well, which option do you recommend? And let's say they say B, and you as the CEO are saying, no, C is the best answer. Bite your tongue, unless B will be driving them off a cliff, because there are multiple options to a situation, to problems. Empower the individual, because if you say no, C is the answer, it's no longer their problem. it is now your problem whether it works or doesn't work. Because if you tell them, do C, if it works, you might or might not get the credit. If it doesn't work, you will get the blame. So stop solving problems.
By your logic, you can also say as the CEO, why did you choose B over A or C?
Sure, exactly. Because now what you're doing is you're teaching them how to be a critical thinker. You want them to think about these things rather than the minute they hit an obstacle, they run to the CEO or they run to someone else rather than trying to solve it. Once they go with B, try it, let me know how it goes. So they come back a day, a week, whatever later, and you ask them, how did it go? And they say, yeah, it worked out. You know, B worked pretty good. And you go, well, great. And they might say, you know, I should have done C. That was probably a much better path. Resist the temptation to say, I could have told you that. Instead say, well, why do you think C would have been a better solution to that particular situation? Let them explain it. So here's what's going to happen over time. They're not going to come in with just problems. They're going to come up with solutions. And because you're not punishing them when they are wrong and taking credit when they're right, you're teaching them to think, to identify the problem, to come up with the options, to evaluate the options. And then if they're not sure whether it should be B and C, now they come to you much further in the decision-making process. They're much more intelligent. They're much better thinkers. And what your line of questioning and approach teaches them how to be better leaders. And this is where the leadership now becomes an acorn that grows into the next tree. Now, the behavior that you're using with them, they'll apply with their people. And this has a cascading effect that permeates the organization. But it starts with the leader, whoever is at the top of this problem. And by the way, this also works in the opposite direction, you know, leading up the organization. But in this case, it was so much fun to watch the CEO from being a very successful command and control individual to being an even more effective, liked, appreciated leader of now new leaders as opposed to just followers.
Part 3, the mirror enables consideration and serious thought. Habits are like muscles. You have to use them to strengthen them, to grow them, to develop them. And there's some habits that we really should develop on a regular basis. Peter challenges us with developing this one particular habit. Here's Peter again.
The one thing that I wholeheartedly recommend for everyone and anyone is to, on a regular basis, stop and reflect. If things are going really well, catch yourself and say, hey, why is this going really well? What am I learning? What's working? What could be better? What do I need to continue doing? What do I need to stop doing? What do I need to start doing? This whole idea of having regular, committed, structured reflection. I used to suggest when I've worked with individuals that they need to reflect at least 3 times a day. The first one is in the morning to sort of start thinking about the future. Where's the goal? What are they trying to accomplish? What would make the day great? And then midday to make sure that they take time to have lunch, not at their desk, not looking over spreadsheets or whatever their work is, but really take a break and reflect, even if it means just looking outside or taking a short walk. Reflect on what has worked and reflect on what the rest of the day is going to look like and reflect on what they have learned. And then at the end of the day, reflect again and sort of create the business closure for the day. So before you cross the threshold of stepping into your personal life, you have closed the door by reflecting, jotting down, if that's you're comfortable with, what your goals are starting tomorrow. So then you can be fully engaged in your personal life, whether that starts at 4 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 8 o'clock, but have closure. So 3 times a day reflection. What I try to do now is reflect all the time, meaning I try to pay attention to what I'm feeling, what is going on every chance that I get. Now, it's not every minute, but on a regular interval, interrupt what is going on to assess and reflect on what I'm experiencing, what I'm learning, and what am I going to do about what I'm learning.
You know, I haven't thought about reflection in this way. Thinking about it, it seems that reflection is like a muscle that you have to develop over time. And it's not something that's natural for you to do, but right, doing it three times a day and even adding a fourth time is a way of building that muscle. I would even encourage tracking. Did I reflect in the morning? Did I, how many times today did I reflect until it becomes more of a natural part of you?
So this is where you use tools to put the structure till the habit is created. And then it's a habit. You don't even think about it. You just automatically do it. I mean, how did you learn to drive a car? I still have flashbacks of how difficult it was trying to stay between the two lines, on the roads. And now I don't even think about it. It's like my body just does it. I can do it mindlessly.
Thank you, Peter Popovich. To learn more about Peter or to contact him, go to the show notes for links. If you have a question or want to make a comment, an audio comment, go to unlabeledleadership.com. There's a icon that says message, and you can leave a message up to 1 minute. If you like the show, go to iTunes and rate it, and leave a comment about what you liked about the show, how it's helped you, and I may play it or read it on the air. If you'd like to support the show, go to unlabeledleadership.com, click the support link, donate 99 cents. Most importantly, thank you for listening. Lead on.